This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, and somehow ends up in first class for the price of coach? Well, Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like how to use AI to plan a trip that doesn't optimize you into a six-hour layover, how to survive and even save on holiday travel, even if you're booking late. That's me. All great things from Smart Travel, so upgrade your trips, not bills, with NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Adrian's got a backpack tight, jet setting through the neon lights, from Tokyo to Rio's glow, riding high, the beat drops low.
Welcome to the Up in the Clouds podcast, featuring your host, Adrian Usling. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. We had a bit of a break there, a little two-week gap. I know. Been moving around a little bit. Went from Peru to Canada to Hawaii, now to Australia. I'm down under. And I think we'll be able to get sorted into a good routine moving forward. We got an absolute banger of an interview for you today. Had James Hammond come on. He's traveled to 70 countries and he's got some fun stories to share and some relatable events as well, because he's done the South America thing. He's done the working visa in Australia. But anywho, I think that's about enough for now. I'm trying to think if there's any fun stories to share. I mean, obviously the moped in Hawaii was a good one. Other than that, it was just the beach days and then some fun nights with the boys. And yeah, Sydney has just been a good vibe so far. Nothing crazy to report. I'm kind of trying to take it a bit easy on that front. So yeah, I think that's it for now. But coming up, like I mentioned, interview with James Hammond. He's currently residing in Vancouver, British Columbia. And yeah, he's got some real fun stories to share. We definitely shared some laughs and we were able to relate a little bit too, because we've had a kind of a similar path. He just happened to do his adventures about 10 years in advance. So, you know, it's good, good talking with him. And I think we'll definitely do a follow-up interview in the future. But as always, let me know what you think. And I am always looking for new guests for the podcast, whether I've met you or you're a first-time listener. So feel free to reach out at upintheclouds@gmail.com or at upintheclouds_ on Instagram. Would love to hear you, whether you want to be a guest or even any feedback. I never get any feedback except for word of mouth, which doesn't happen too often. So anyways, I think that's all we got for you today. So without further ado, let's head on over to the interview. All right, our next guest to the Up in the Clouds podcast claims to have traveled to 70 countries, yet he chooses to live in Vancouver, British Columbia, of all places. He is a fellow travel podcast host with over 10 years travel experience and over 180 episodes published since COVID. He's hiked volcanoes in Guatemala, ridden a camel through the Thar Desert, not sure if I'm saying that right, and experienced a Yukon winter. The lover of baked beans, Jimi Hendrix, and a good coffee, James Hammond.
Hey, Adrian, how you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, I got stuck here in Vancouver, so that's why I'm here.
Oh, you got stuck there. Well, did you get stuck there, or is it because of a woman?
No, it's because of COVID.
Oh, and you're still there?
Yeah, still there, yeah. Hanging on.
All right. Well, they let you stay. So, I mean, that's a good thing. That's a good start. Now, before we get into the interview here, I like to do a little segment called Speed Round Questions. Are you familiar with this?
No, let's do it.
No, of course not. He doesn't listen to the podcast. What am I talking about? All right. So I'm going to give you two options. You pick the option you like the best.
Yep.
I'll let you have a sip and then we'll get going. All right. Happy to be home or wish you were traveling?
Traveling.
Road trip or hop on a flight?
Road trip.
Record in person or online?
In person.
Plan ahead or wing it?
Wing it.
Gringo trail or off the beaten path?
Off the beaten path.
South America or Southeast Asia?
Oh. It's like a first love versus a new love. Southeast Asia.
Okay. Americano or latte?
Americano.
Red kidney or black beans?
Red kidney.
Beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Yeah, that one gets everyone. Make the introduction or stick to yourself?
Stick to myself.
Yeah? Oh, okay. That one surprises me.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Well, that's it. That's the speed round questions right there.
You that's did fucking well, fun. I like that. No, I like that. Yeah.
There you go.
Might have my own podcast. That's quite a good idea.
I enjoy doing it, right? Because it kind of just warms you up a little bit, like loosens the nerves. Yeah. And I try to put some fun ones in there, you know, like the beans.
Yeah. Tell you what, though, South America, I'm now feeling bad I didn't say it.
Oh tough one. No. There's nothing like your first love. You know what I mean?
Southeast Asia. Yeah. That's where it all started. Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to start things off for everyone that's listening. You have a lot of travel experience. Like I said, you've been to 70 countries, you've been doing the podcast for a while. But what I want to know is where your inspiration began. Like, where did it all begin? What was your inspiration? And why did you choose Australia for your visa? A lot of questions there.
Okay. Australia for the visa is an easy one because I went to watch the cricket in 2010-11. So okay. I don't know if you're interested in cricket or not. I'm actually flying back there later in the year to watch it again for the third time. So when I first went in 2010, I couldn't really believe what I was seeing. So I was like, do you know what? It'd be cool to stay here. And in Perth at a test match, a guy in front of us who is first generation Australian, his dad's from Leeds in the UK, he's like, you just get a work permit and come over here, buy a car, get a job. I was like, that sounds quite a good idea. And literally after that trip, I was like, okay, I'm going to look into this. And as a UK passport holder, you can get it pretty much ASAP. So I booked that in. But I was 2 out of 4 years into my degree. So I thought I'd finish my music degree and then I'll go. So I got a job, saved money, planned my trip. And that was a 2-year trip for 6 months travel first, Australia in the middle, and then South America at the end of it. And then Europe at the very, very end. And the inspiration behind that was just that trip, I think. I think I realized there's more places other than Europe. Because when you grow up in the UK, you kind of dip into France and Germany. You don't really take it seriously. Like, it's just over there. You don't actually, like, invest in the culture. You just think, I'm going to watch football or we're going on a lad's holiday. It's not that big, right? But when I got to Australia, that kind of changed.
Well, it's a big world out there. And that's what you realize when you actually go, I'm going to say international. I mean, obviously for you going to different countries, international, but it's still Europe, right? It's still kind of a similar feeling. But when you go across the globe, you realize, okay, there's a lot more out there. There's a lot more to see and experience. And all that. So how hard was it for you to get the visa when you're coming to Australia?
Oh, it took like an afternoon.
Yeah. Okay. Super easy as well. Yeah.
No criminal record. So that helped out. Yeah.
Well, and that's really all it is, right? As long as you meet the age requirements, you don't have a criminal record. I know when I applied, I actually got the acceptance so quickly through the email that I didn't even notice it for 3 days.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Is that what you're on now?
That is what I'm on now. So I just started mine. I was approved last September. And kind of similar to what you did, I decided to travel for a bit first, then come to Australia so I could make some money and then fund the future travel. So you were saying you went to Southeast Asia before Australia then? Is that where you went for the 6 months?
Yeah. So me and my buddy from uni went and booked a trip and he's like, do you fancy going to Asia? I'm like, Asia, where's that? He's like, just Southeast Asia. I was like, yeah, why not? It sounds quite a thing. So, he wanted to do 3 months in Southeast Asia first, and I agreed. And then we went to Fiji, New Zealand, and then Australia. But I really had no idea what I was getting myself into in Southeast Asia. I was like, I'll land in Bangkok and see what happens. And we just had the most unbelievable time. And to put you back into previous times, this was a time before smartphones. So 2013 January, they were about, but they weren't as readily available as they are today or even affordable. So I was like, we're kind of landing with a sort of half a book and we're going to wing it in hostels and speak to people and try it out. But we got scammed loads of times and it's all part of the fun. And we made up as we went along and met a nice group of people. Actually, we hang around with them for 6 weeks and went around Cambodia, up Vietnam, Laos, back into North Thailand and back down again. So that was our route.
Well, and that's the biggest thing, like you're saying, is like you can plan it all you want, but I find the best trips are when you're winging it. Like maybe choose your first destination, book your first couple nights so you're not stressing there. But I find that once you get to those locations, it's all about the people you meet, right? You're going to meet people that have other plans that you're going to jump on board with, or you're going to get recommendations from people who have literally just been there. So it's much better to just book that first spot and then you'll just figure it out from there.
Yeah, booked a hostel called Lub D and we stayed there for a week and that was longer than planned because we met so many great people, right? So there's loads of things I probably wouldn't do now, but like, yeah, went to Koh San Road, went to a ping pong show, went to an elephant sanctuary, which is not great. So all the things you do when you're younger, but all a lot of good experiences to learn from, yeah, and good fun.
Well, tell me about some of these things that you wouldn't do nowadays. Let's get into some story time here. you know, some stories from Southeast Asia, maybe some things that people can expect or might want to try.
Okay, this is how green I was. When I heard a ping pong show, I was like, I like table tennis. I'll go and watch some of that. I was like, why is this at 2 a.m.? Oh, it's a bit weird. So off the Koh San Road, we went to this ping pong show and it's like this shady street. You get ushered into a door and like, that's a bit weird. But a big bar there, lots of like heavy guys in suits. I'm like, a bit strange. Walk in, there's about 10 of us here, I think. And then you quickly realize that there's a stage and a lady will approach the stage and she'll have some ping pong balls and she'll start firing them out from all sorts of places on her body. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like darts coming out like into balloons. I was like drawing pictures on the table with their vagina, all this sort of stuff, right? So I'm like, oh, wow, this is pretty pretty hectic. But I think a lot of the group didn't realise what was going on and we wanted to leave. And that got a bit aggy, actually. Like they got a bit angry with us that we wanted to leave so early. We bought maybe one drink. So the guys in the group had to sort of be like protected a little bit and got the women out first. And then we sort of hailed down a few tuk-tuks and got out of there. But yeah, it was a bit of a strange night. But obviously, when you're older, you wouldn't do that now. It's a bit out there.
Oh, why wouldn't you do it now? What do you mean? I never got the chance. Well, I shouldn't say I never got the chance. I never made it to one of the ping pong shows. We'll just say that. I was actually part of a tour group at the time, and I guess it wasn't part of the itinerary.
Imagine G Adventures put out in the itinerary. Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of surprised this group didn't. I did Life Before Work, and we did some pretty risky things, I guess you could say. But I heard a lot about them, never got the chance. Koh San Road, though, of course, right? Iconic.
Classic.
Tons of parties down that road. You know, during the day, it's hectic because you're walking down there and you're just getting harassed the whole time, right? Like, buy a suit, buy this, buy that. Yeah. Like, I remember the one day I was so hungover. And I think it was near the end of my trip and I was just done with it at this point. And I just ended up like unloading on this one Thai guy, like, get out of my face. Like, I felt so bad after, but I was like, dude, stop. Like, it was every like 3 seconds, right? But then, of course, that night, it just turns into a big party. That's where you have like all your
great fun.
Oh, what was it? What's the fried scorpion and all that? Like, you could try.
Oh, yeah, classic. Yeah, two of those. Yeah.
And just drinking the buckets out in the street. Oh, man, that was a good time.
Good times. I found that road quite interesting, actually, when you analyze it. Because when you go day and night, it does change, right? But nighttime just sort of turns into this like dark bit of fun where you're, like, you have no idea what's around that corner. You're going to sit there and have your bucket and you drink these buckets. They're like, I don't know, got like little bottles of whiskey or M150 in them, whatever. And you just smash them back. And before you know it, you're well gone. So, yeah, it's a classic Thailand thing, I think. Yeah,
you had some experience with that. Well, usually I had a two bucket special. I could have two buckets and then I was good because, they basically have, like, in Canadian terms, they have a Mickey alcohol, they'd have a Red Bull, they'd have some mix in it, spray or whatever, and then I think like one or two other ingredients, and those things just sent you to the moon. So, I said two of those and I'm good, but I can't go over because when I first got there, I think I had three or four the one night, and I had to be babysat, so.
I think the only time I had three or four was in Koh Phi Phi, and I got lost. And Koh Phi Phi is really small, but I got lost on the way home. I was like, should I be lost? And this British diver found me just on this beach. She's like, where are you going? I was like,
I'm trying to get home to my hostel, but I have no idea where I am. But I was completely out of it. Like, he sort of just like got me by the shoulder and coaxed me back a little bit. But yeah, I realized at that point that I can't have more than two. That's my limit. Mm-hmm. And I think for Co-PP, it's good fun, but there's so much parties on the beaches, right? You can get lost in there, and you need to be a little bit careful, I think.
That was where the full moon party was, if I'm correct, right? Co-PP?
That's Copenyang.
Copenyang. Yeah. I get it. There's so many Co's. Co-Tao, Co-PP, Copenyang. Yeah. But...
Yeah. Co-Tao's a classic.
Did you do the full moon party?
No, because we timed it really badly. We went to the F1 in Malaysia. So we had a choice, full moon party or going to the Formula One. So we kind of chose, for once, probably the right decision, I think. Yeah, party's a party. It's a great experience, but you can always go. So we went to Malaysia Grand Prix and went to the after party. We got tickets. So what happens is when you finish the Grand Prix, if you go by the main stand, those guys actually get VIP access to the back, but they all go home. So if you just ask for their ticket, you grab their ticket and you get into this VIP. And Guns N' Roses were playing there, so that's a pretty cool experience. But I nearly got crushed on the way in, so that wasn't a pleasant moment. Yeah, they had gates, you know, individual gates as you queue up, and people were pushing behind, and people won't let us in at the front. And, you know, I'm a fairly big lad, I'm quite fat and stuff, so I thought, I've got to push people out of the way because I'm getting crushed. So it's quite a bad experience getting in, but once we were in, it was quite good fun.
All right, bit of a cable rush there then. Yeah, fair enough. Well, actually, I'm kind of curious about the F1 event itself, though. Like, how was it? Because I'm an F1 fan now, right? Drive to Survive on Netflix, that kind of got me into the whole sport.
Oh, yeah.
But I was always curious because, obviously, when you're watching the race on TV, you get to see the whole race, whereas if you actually attend the race, you're seeing just one strip of the track. So, like, what was your experience like? Like, was it a good time?
You have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
If there's any F1 fans, yeah. Yeah, because unless you have a radio and you got maybe the commentary giving you updates, you might know what's going on. But other than that, you just see the guys going round and round and you think they're in a position, but you don't actually know. So it's a weird sport to watch live. And it's so loud, like ridiculously loud.
Okay. So you're more just there for the atmosphere than anything, just to be with the other people and just take in the whole weekend, the whole experience rather than...
Yeah, I'm an F1 fan. I'm an old school one. I like the old David Coulthard and Mika Hakkinen back in the 2000s. But what's weird about that race is there was a controversial moment, but we didn't know until after we got back. So... Yeah, it'd be nice to know that when we were there, but we didn't know. So
yeah, you'd think they have like big screens up or something where you could actually watch what was going on while you're not visibly seeing it, but something to work on, I guess, for them. We'll send the recommendation in. So for someone that wants to travel Southeast Asia, obviously it's a very popular destination now, right? Tons of people are going to Thailand, Bali, even Vietnam. What would be a hidden gem for you? Maybe a location or a country that people don't often speak of that you went to and had a really good experience in?
Okay, second time round, I did it twice, the same loop. I went to Myanmar, which in the current day and age, I'm not sure what is the latest there with the junta and the local population. I know it's a bit iffy. Anyway, when I went there, on a whim, we winged it for 4 days. We booked a flight for Air Asia from Bangkok return, and we had the most unbelievable time. This is like a throwback into really cheap prices. Local food, no tourists, no signs in English, and just kind of going to hostel, speaking to someone, hopefully someone knows something. And we went to Bagan, which is where it's a big area of temples, and for sunrise and sunset it's absolutely incredible. You get a little e-bike out, drive around, and it's just a serene area. Like, that would be my big tip if you can get to Myanmar.
Okay, so I know I'm a travel podcast host, but my geography is terrible. Where is that?
That is, if you look at Thailand, to the northwest in that corner.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
You got Chiang Mai, you look to the left, mm-hmm. and then it's like, it's up there. So quick flight and unbelievable. Like, you'll be going back in time if you can travel. But that was before the troubles now. So I'm not sure what it's like.
Fair enough. And that's one thing I've noticed, right? Is travel is very commonplace now. And a lot of places that used to be authentic are very touristy. I noticed that a lot in South America. I thought I was going to have a certain experience. And I mean, sure, I
probably should have gotten off the beaten path a little bit more, but I didn't, more just because of solo safety concerns, all that stuff. But it was much more traveled than I expected, much more westernized too. But before we get to South America, I want to touch on your experience in Australia with the visa, because that's what I'm doing right now. So I'm just curious, what did you end up doing while you were here? Like, what were you doing for work? Did you get to explore the whole country? Were you just staying in one city?
Okay, so first 6 weeks was East Coast. So that was Cairns down to Brisbane, Noosa, Brisbane. And that was like a pre-booked trip because I was running out of money. So I wanted to lock that in. And I ran out of money by the time I got to Brisbane, and I met someone on the East Coast who gave me a number for a job. And I used a payphone. Yeah, this is like back in the day. I used a payphone to ring this company.
Don't age yourself too much.
Part of the story, isn't it? Yeah, she gave me a job, this person who I rang. She said, oh yeah, come on Monday. You can have a job, admin work in this office in Melbourne. So I flew down, stayed with a couple of people I met in Asia, Southeast Asia. And I did like basic computer admin stuff. I don't know, printing documents off, sending them to lecturers. And they're like an education company. So that was like $26, $27 an hour, which back in those days was like the best I've ever been paid. So I thought, okay, I'll take that.
Yep.
That was 6 months and pretty much work, apart from the odd break for cricket, of course. And then done the cricket, then flew to Western Australia to Margaret River to do grape picking to get my extension for a second year.
Yep.
Didn't get enough hours or enough days, and I didn't risk paying a farmer. So I did that for about 3 months, and I then got a job in the mines doing kitchen work, which was paid about $27, $28 an hour, but it's 12-hour shifts. And I did 17 days on, week off, 17 days on.
Yeah.
And that was tough, tough going in the kitchens. You're cleaning, you're prepping food, like 10 till 10. I did day shifts and night shifts. Yeah. And that was pretty hard work. But that bailed me out because I got no money from the grapes. I did a bit of like driving tractors and stuff, but not much work. So that got me my funds for South America. So on the whole, yeah, a bit of East Coast, bit of in the middle, a couple more cities, and then living in Melbourne for a city thing, and then living in Margaret River, which is like this idyllic vineyard area with a car. That's pretty cool.
So what was the farm work like? Like, what were the conditions like? And then I'm also curious about the mining. Like, I know you said it was obviously hard being in the kitchen there, but that's actually something I've considered getting into. My ideal would be to do firefighting out here. That's what I'm trying to do. There's a lot of red tape when it comes to certifications and transferring everything over. But if that doesn't work out, I kind of do want to get in the mine. So also, if you have any contact, let me know.
I can tell you how I got there because they still exist. So I went to, in Perth, I went to Hayes Agency. I think it's a Hayes here in Vancouver, I think. Hayes Agency at the time, this might need a bit more research, they did the mines contracts, and they get the temps for all types of jobs in the mining sector. That could be kitchens, that could be doing maintenance, whatever that they need, right? Reception. So I went to there, and you pay about $500 to get all your certificates and your qualifications. You do some online courses, health and safety. Once you do that and you're in the pool to work, you can get a call the next day to go, and they pay for your flights there and back. And of course, your accommodation is in that, and your free food, and you just go and do the work, and you fly back out. So a lot of people do that for 2 weeks on, 1 week off. And if you're looking for a quick way to earn a lot of money, I think that's a good way to go, especially in Australia, where they can pay a lot of money. So that's how I did it with Hayes. Hayes and Perth is the place to go. And then for vineyard work, that was sunrise, because it's so hot. So you're up at 4:30, starting at 5, picking grapes. I was bucket boy, so I was collecting buckets, which is paid by the hour, not by the grape. Okay. And then I was driving tractors as well and putting some netting on the vineyards. That was paid by the hour. Yeah. But that would be early work. You'd be doing like 5 till 12 or 1, and that'd be it. Mm-hmm. And it all depends if the vineyard need the work, because it's not guaranteed. They'll let the agency know. It's called Vine Power, and they will let you know if they've got some work, and you get called up to go and do it.
Well, I don't know how it was back then. I know now if you work in the mines or even do something like firefighting, it actually qualifies you for your second year. I'm not sure if that was the case when you were there.
Yeah, I looked into this because I was like in the middle of nowhere, right? I was in Port Hedland, Northwest Australia. And at the time, I don't think it actually qualified for a second year, which is a bit unfortunate. So I actually didn't get my days and I never applied for it again. A big regret for me is you might as well apply for it, because if you get investigated, then you know you're not going to get away with it. But if you're willing to lose $400, you might as well risk the chance that you don't get investigated and they say, yep, here's a second year, right? So I kind of wish I did that, but there you go.
Oh, so they don't always check. Like they can investigate to say, like, see if you actually did it, or they could just qualify and say, okay, sure, yeah, you did it. Move along.
Well, back in the day, 1 in 4 got checked. So that was the odds. It's the odds in your favor, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, those are good odds. I'll take 1 in 4. I'll take 1 in 4.
Yeah.
But no, that's good to know, because yeah, like I said, if the firefighting doesn't work out, I think mines would be preferable, because I'd rather just work like 6 months, make a ton of money.
And, oh, yeah, yeah.
For people listening, like, I did the same thing actually up in Canada. I worked oil and gas as well. And when you're working, you're in camp, everything's provided, accommodation, food. So you're literally just banking everything you make. But I'm curious, you were getting the 1 week off. So what were you doing for your week off? Like, did you have an apartment somewhere? Were you just traveling for a week? What were you doing?
I was back to the hostel in Margaret River, sleeping pretty much. Mate, I was done in.
Yeah, it was bad.
I can't do manual jobs. I still don't do them today. Like, I'm just not built for it. It took me a week to get acclimatized, because like, you're sweating all the time and you're getting used to working those hours. But by the time I got back to Margaret River, I'd done 17 days. I was like, I'm going to sleep here for a week and just chill out and go to the beach. Some pizzas by the beach, maybe some vineyard tours, but nothing too crazy, because I had to go to South America, which I booked it and I needed the money. So I was like, it's going to be cheap living to the max. The one bit of advice I'd have for the vineyards, have a car. Mm-hmm. If you've got a car, you get more jobs, because you can take people and you're more valuable.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure about a car. I do want to do the van life thing. I want to buy a van out here for the coast. That was one of my ideas after I'm done working. But we'll see what happens with that. Because I understand now, and again, this has all changed, I'm sure, since you've been here, but cars aren't cheap out here. It's not like Canada where you can buy just a beater for like $2,000. It's like, I think the one girl was saying she was looking the other day and it was like $6,000 or $7,000 for a car. Wow. So yeah.
I bought mine for $400. Yeah.
Oh, come on. Yeah. See, that's what I'm used to though. You just buy this.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Like Honda Civic 1986 or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. $400. Just abuse it. Yeah. And yeah. No worries.
Sold it for $400. That's a win-win.
Oh, that's a great deal. Yeah. You're winning on that one. All right, fair enough. Well, yeah, it's something I got to look into. I've only been here a week. I've only been in Sydney a week.
And
I've
been putting
too much stress on, like, finding a job and all that. Like, I have some money to play with. I need to just, like, you know, embrace being here and enjoy it for a little bit before I get too serious. But, yeah. I spent the whole day yesterday trying to figure out the certs. I got my Australian driver's license, so that's a start.
Oh, bonus. Yeah.
But to get the license to drive fire trucks, I got to do actual road tests. So I got to do a road course. So there's a whole bunch of stuff to look into. But no one cares about that. No one listening cares. So we'll move on.
No, but it's a great, I love it. It's a great plan, right? You got a plan. Some people I met on East Coast even in Perth, I just don't really have a plan or an idea, right? So if people have a rough plan, it does help you out, because it can get stressful if you're trying to find a job and there's nowhere to go or no help or whatever, right? So, yeah, speak to as many people as you can and you'll find someone who can help you out. I think that's the advice.
Exactly. Yeah, well, the hostel I'm staying in, it's known for longer stays, like people who are moving on a visa, trying to find a job. So there's like a job posting board. Everyone I'm talking to is just in limbo right now. They're like, you know, I'm just trying to find work, or I'm just waiting for my job to start. So
yeah,
a lot of people in the same boat. But okay, so after Australia, you then went to South America. Now, I just finished my trip through Central South America. I did
seven months,
Nicaragua, down to Peru. Absolutely fell in love with the terrain, incredible, with the culture, with the women, all of that fun stuff. I want to hear about your experience. Like, where did you go, and get some stories out of you from South America?
Yeah. Actually, just quickly, I went to El Salvador last year, and that was an amazing trip. In Central America, that was incredible. Backpack there for 2 weeks. But back in those days, I went to the World Cup in Rio de Janeiro.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
I met some friends from home in Rio. Yes, I flew from Melbourne to Hawaii for 2.5 weeks, had a little bit of a break, realized Hawaii is criminally expensive. And then
I just
got out of
there. Yeah, I just spent a week there. I think I spent at least $1,000. I didn't even look at my bank account. Yeah.
You just don't do it. You just crack on. Yeah. Yeah, I got out of there. So I flew to Rio de Janeiro and I had 2.5-3 weeks going to the Maracanã in Rio, watching the games. I saw Messi there score a goal. That's pretty cool. And then I went to watch England fail and get knocked out in Sao Paulo and Belo Horizonte. These were the cities I went to. And we were based in Copacabana. That was a great 2.5 weeks. That was a great vibe. Yeah, they love the football, right? So it's that extra vibe
course,
there.
Of course. I mean, you know, England's going to flop, right? So, I mean, okay.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. So shit. Yeah. Let's talk about that. The best thing I did actually in Rio was a favela tour. A favela, yeah. So
favela. What the heck's a favela?
Favela.
A favela, favela. My bad.
That's my accent. No. These places were out of bounds really until the World Cup, and then the police went in and tried to control it, which actually caused more problems in the end. But when the police were there, you can sort of do like paid tours. So we booked this geezer who was from the favela we went to, but he studied in the UK and he took us on a tour through it, and it's incredible. Like you're a bit on edge, like, you kind of heard about these places, they're a bit crazy, there's gun crime, drugs, everything you can imagine, right? But actually it's pretty cool. He knew everyone, took us through, got some corn on the cob, we got some coffees on the go. It's a real great experience to learn about how those guys live. And I thought that was a pretty cool experience. So that was a unique one, because I thought it's mostly going to be drinking because my friends just want to drink and watch football. But in the downtime between, we did a few of these tours. So that was great. And then
out of curiosity, how do they live? Like, what was it like in the favelas, if that's how you say it?
Yeah, yeah. They're like at the time, they were, they called them C-class citizens. So they're not the upper class, A-class in Ipanema Beach, not them. They're not like the Copacabana B-class, which are probably more like working middle class. These are the poorest, but then have risen a little bit up the social scale. So they have an address, they have a bank account, and they can get jobs. And they do have jobs. Okay. Whereas the class below them are just surviving on the street, you know, like the homeless here in Vancouver, those sort of people, right? So these guys are becoming the new middle class, apparently. So that was at that time. And they were just living life. Like, they've got markets, they're making money, they're playing football in the street. Pretty safe, pretty cool. Okay. Yeah. Would recommend it if someone wants to go and check it out. It's the second biggest one in Brazil. Yeah.
It's what you don't see behind the scenes though, right? That's why I feel like, especially like if you're on a tour, I feel like you're going to be safe, especially if the guide knows people. And I feel like for the most part, they're not going to mess with the tourists, right? Because they know, like, if they do anything to the tourists, like, they're done, right? So I think if anything, it's just local, you know, bad news bears happening over there. But and that's how I felt a lot of the time in Central South America.
Yeah.
My experience, I actually felt so safe, which was kind of strange for me, but I felt like, you know what, there's probably a lot happening behind the scenes that I have no idea about, right? It's just what I'm seeing in front of me, and I always felt safe.
Yeah, I think I felt safe in most countries in South America. I think the place I didn't feel totally at ease was Bolivia, but I did love it. But I thought, need to keep wits about me here. So yes, I went to Iguazu Falls on the border of Argentina, across the border, did that, and went up to Salta, North Argentina, and then across to the Atacama Desert in Chile. And that was a pretty cool experience, done the salt flats and the ice hotel and all that sort of stuff. And then went to Bolivia for 3.5 weeks. And that was my main part of the trip. And that was kind of like winging it a little bit. Did the death row thing, did the silver mine tour in Potosi. That was crazy. Like, we went to Potosi, one of the highest cities in the world, booked a silver mine tour. I had no idea what to expect. And if you're claustrophobic, this is not for you. You've got a helmet and a light, and you're climbing up ladders in the dark, and you hear explosions in the mine. You go to the market to buy dynamite and children's books for the miners, and you give them to the miners in the mine.
Dynamite and children's books. That's a combination, right?
Yeah. Cocoa leaves as well.
Oh my gosh. Oh, they got the cocoa leaves. I like the cocoa leaves. Yeah, those are nice.
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting three combo, isn't it? Yeah. That's what they want.
Very, very interesting. Yeah. You only give them one of those to the kids. Hopefully.
the cocoa leaves, yeah. I think that was a eye-opening experience. That was a proper, I'm in like a working mine. It's been there for 500 years. And strange things you see. You just see like young boys like walk from the dark and they're just like working in the mine. They're like 12, 13, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so did that tour. And then the Death Road thing was interesting.
That sounds like Death Road? Such a good... No, so here's the thing is Bolivia was going to be my last stop in South America.
Oh, yeah.
But I was starting to run out of money and they were having a bit of issues with road blockages and they had an election coming up. So there's a bit of turmoil. Classic, exactly. Yeah. So we ended up bailing on it. We didn't go, but that was supposed to be my last stop. Yeah.
Okay. So Death Road was an interesting experience. I tell the story and I cringe because it sounds like it didn't happen, but I went with my friend and he got kitted up in the bike like me. You kind of go into three groups. You get the crazy bikers at the front who are like mountain bike guys, and they just bike down and go crazy. Bear in mind, you start at the top and work your way down along the edge of a cliff. And I was in the middle, like not scared, but not like crazy. And then my friend was kind of a bit behind, yeah, and his brakes didn't work going down the hill. And he said that he had to crash into the guy in front because he was going to go off the cliff. So we got to a stopping point and they told us to stop. Like, oh, why is that? He goes, oh, there's been an incident. So waited. And my friend turned up. He's got like cuts all over his arms and his face. I was like, what's going on? He goes, mate, yeah, my brakes went. I was like, right. He goes, I had a choice. Do I crash into the guy next to me and into the wall and save me? Or do I sort of hope to try and turn it around the edge of the cliff and not go off it? I was like, oh, bloody hell. He goes, I chose the guy. So he crashed into this guy. This guy was not happy.
Yeah,
but we're trying to explain to him that he had no choice because if he didn't do that, he was off the cliff.
Yeah.
So they fetched his bike from the edge of the cliff and they fixed it up and gave it back to him. So he's like, I'm gonna trail down this trail like as slow as I can. And then
I'm not getting back on that bike. Are you kidding me? The brakes give out and then they fix it, quote unquote. I know that.
Yeah.
No. A little duct tape, that ain't gonna do it.
No, that was an interesting experience. Yeah, so that was the highlight of Bolivia, I think, for me.
Gosh. I'm a bit of an adrenaline like junkie, right? And so like doing the Death Road would be so fun, but I'm worried that I get a little too carried away and like have too much trust on the brakes, because I'd be thinking, oh, I'm in Canada, the brakes are gonna work, it's all good, it's a new bike. But meanwhile it's like probably a piece of shit and like the brakes are barely hanging on and I'm gonna go around a corner and just be like, oh yeah, no problem, and then all of a sudden, oh, I got no brakes and got to do like the Mission Impossible bailout on the bike.
Yeah, that's what he had. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. I think in hindsight I'll just book with a really good company. I wouldn't even risk it. Make sure they got proper mountain bikes and not crappy ones that we used. Yeah.
Well, and Bolivia is so cheap, right? Like you don't have to do the cheap route when you're there. Like I heard this, like you can go with like a better company or you can go with like a nicer restaurant because it's still cheap. And actually, if you go the cheapest option, right, like especially food wise, you're probably getting food poisoning. So you might as well just get the good option. And it's still like, what, $1, $2 a meal.
Yeah, exactly. And the food's horrendous there in Bolivia as well. That's pretty shit. Yeah. No. So,
okay.
Yeah. We went to, have you heard of the Route 36 bar? Have you heard of this?
I don't think I have. No.
Okay. And if you go to Bolivia and go to La Paz, which is like the de facto capital, it's not the proper capital, but most people go there. If you type into Google Route 36, I'd be keen to see what comes up. But this is an all-you-can-sniff cocaine bar. So what happens is they change locations every 2 months and so they don't really get caught. So you speak to your taxi driver and you say you want to go there. And I was acting really, really shifty. He's like, okay, just get in. It's like, okay. And then he just took us to this like garage door, pulled up and went in. And it's a nice trendy bar. It's like a jazz bar. There's nice music. The drinks are pretty cheap. And then you've got these guys just walking around giving you how much ever you want. And you pay them on the spot in cash and everyone's doing it on the tables. So that was a one night experience that I didn't think I'd have.
I'm actually surprised I haven't heard about this, but we're gonna leave people with a little cliffhanger here because our free meeting is gonna end actually in about 60 seconds. So we're gonna continue this story in a moment here. Zoom, if you're listening to this and want to sponsor the podcast, that'd be great, so I don't have to keep interrupting these interviews. But we'll see in a few minutes here.
Yeah, check that in Google. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, so thanks to all our sponsors there during our little TV timeout. Just kidding, I don't actually have any. So we were just talking about that bar, though. What was it called again? Route 36?
Route 36, yeah. I actually Googled it because I'm like, this is 10 years ago, and I need to make sure this thing exists. So I Googled it and it's there at the top. Wikipedia, there's a stylist thing. It says the world's first cocaine bar by The Guardian, like all these things. So yeah, it's still there.
All right. Well, I did hear, and this is probably the bar I heard about, but I heard people telling me that being in Bolivia, that there's a bar where if you order a beer, you get a line of Coke. So it could be that. It could be
okay.
One. Who knows? Yeah.
Could be the same one. Yeah,
could
yeah.
Be the same one. Yeah. Maybe they reduced it a little bit, you know, like we're like, okay, we got to like chill out a little bit. But yeah, if you buy a beer, we'll give you a line. No problem. Like, and still.
Oh, wow. Good. I think we bought one drink and then just did the rest of the night just doing the Coke. So I think. Yeah, I think one beer gets you away with it, but it's so cheap, you just buy loads of beers. But what was weird is we got boozed up the few hours before. So when we're going to this place at 4 a.m., we're like, oh, well, now it's a different phase. We've done the booze stuff, and now we're doing this phase, and we're up to like 11 a.m. So, yeah, it's like two phases of the nights, right? Yeah, it's just a interesting night.
sounds familiar, sounds familiar, yeah. Any other takeaways from Bolivia? Like any other stories or cool experiences you had? Obviously, there's the salt flats too, right? That's a big reason I wanted to go there, but didn't make it.
Yeah, that was the border cross. I done a tour from Chile across to Bolivia via the salt flats. That was like a crossing the border salt flat tour. That was great. That was unbelievable. Incredible scenes. And we went in dry season. So not the mirror image, but the far as the eye can see, that sort of image is great. Yeah, so we did that. Incredible. And then from Bolivia, I think we did Sucre, which is like the official capital. It's very quiet, quaint, nice. Nothing much going on there. But La Paz was the crazy place. And then obviously Potosi was too high up. Like you can't breathe. You can't sleep that well. It's just too far in terms of altitude, right? So we got back down and went to Lake Titicaca, which is the border of Peru. And we did that. But I got the shits on the boat. So I was like, oh, I was so ill.
Yeah,
it wasn't great. It wasn't a great time.
Yeah, I've had that actually. That was my first 3 weeks in Nicaragua. I did not straighten myself until Costa Rica, and I'm convinced now it's because every hostel said they had filtered water. But when I actually thought about it, and because at the time I wasn't paying attention, I was drinking so much, I was just like in a different world. But I look back at it and I was like, I'm pretty sure it was just like a big bottle of water upside down into this little funnel. There was no filter system whatsoever. So,
war is a killer. I had that in India, and I was like sick for 4 days. That's grim. Yeah, water is a killer. Don't play with that. Yeah.
No. Don't mess with that. Yeah. Bolivia, did you go to the Amazon at all?
I did not. That's the big regret. So that's on my list to go back to go to. Is it Santa Cruz in the east or Cochabamba? One of those two, and yeah, do that. That's next on the hit list.
Because we were looking at doing the Amazon, I think it was in Ecuador, but the only kind of tours they offered were more like your couple romantic tours where you go to like this resort and you're in the Amazon and you do like bird watching. And me and my buddy are looking at each other. I'm like, don't get me wrong. Like, I like you and all, but like, I don't like you that much.
So, yeah.
Yeah. We figured we'd save that for Bolivia because it'd be more of like an adventure tour. So again, one of the things I didn't get to do, I'll have to go back at some point.
Yeah. We had a bit of a hard stop really because we had to go and do the Inca Trail, which we booked ahead of time.
Yep.
So I'm not sure if you can win that these days, but I think back then we booked in the January for the July, so we had like 2.5-3 months to get to Cusco to do that tour, right? So yeah, we gotta move on.
January to July, you can still do. You definitely can't do like spur of the moment anymore because it does book up. I think we booked our Inca Trail 2 months in advance and it was
fun. Right.
But I would talk to a lot of people and they'd say like, oh, you just did it. Like I'm going there next week. Like I was looking at booking a tour or whatever. And I'm like, you have no chance. Like, no, you can't do it that late. You can do the 1 day. So a lot of people, right, they just do the 1 day tour. They just get a bus there, walk up, take their pictures for Instagram. Like, I feel like you got to do it the proper way. You got to earn it, right? You got to do the 4 day trek, be out there, up early mornings, hiking 20 kilometers. That's what makes it worth it. Yeah.
I totally agree. And the upside of that is you get to the gates early doors before they get open to the day tourists. I think you get in about 6, don't you? I think. And then you all get your photo opportunity with no one in it. So that's the golden, I guess, like the prize at the end where you do work your arse off for 4 days getting there. I mean, that day two is tough, isn't it? Oh, fucking hell.
That was the hardest day. That was a long day. The worst part is I didn't take a shit until the last day. So I was battling that too. Because all the washrooms were just a hole in the floor. And I remember the, like, I think it was day two, I went to go use it, and I was like, wait a second. Like, what is this? And so, like, I tried to squat, didn't work. I tried taking my pants off and just standing there. It wasn't working. So that was something I was battling the whole time. But no, I remember getting to Sungate. Yeah, it was 6:30 in the morning for us. And it was me and my two friends. They had come to visit from Canada. And we ended up bringing a Summit beer. So it's 6:30 in the morning. And we got a video of us in front of Machu Picchu just crushing a beer. Yeah. Is a good memory. Yeah.
Unbelievable. I love the view of that, but the train after. Did you get the train back to Cusco? That slow train?
Yeah.
Just sitting there, like, reflecting was quite a nice little train ride back to Cusco. That was quite a nice moment as well.
Definitely. How was your, I'm assuming you did it with a group. How was your group? Because we actually ended up having a really good group. So that train ride was even that much more fun because we're sitting there reflecting and then we're also having some beers and celebrating. And then I remember, like, we took the bus ride back to Cusco and it turned into like a impromptu karaoke session. And we just stopped for beers every like 30 minutes. Is such a good time.
Yeah, great group. I went with SAS Travel, I think they were called, in Cusco. And the group was a mix. It was like an old doctor. There was a young couple. There's a youngster who just turned 18 from America. So a full mix of people, but everyone got on. And I had this weird crush on the Australian lady, actually, but she was with her husband there. A bit strange. My friend who was with me said that whole 4 days was a weird watch. I said, what do you mean?
He goes,
you're sort of like trying to crack onto a little bit, but her husband is literally right there. I was like, well, yeah, maybe. I didn't really realize I was like that intense about it. But yeah. Yeah, cool group. Yeah, it's good. Good fun.
Oh, you never know. You never realize what you're doing until your friends call you out for it. And you go, yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, loved it. Yeah. As a top-notch experience, yeah.
Well, I definitely recommend it. We did it with a group called Trey Experience, and it was a really good, really well-known experience too. The guides were great. The porters were awesome. And it's quite, you know, quite bougie. They lay it all out for you. They carry all your stuff. You're getting 3 warm meals a day. I mean,
It was, the food was great, wasn't it? I remember.
Oh, it's fun. I was not expecting what we got. Like, we're talking like 4 or 5 different like dishes, way more food than I can eat. Like, yeah, I was not expecting that.
I was kind of worried about, I'm not going to get like enough food to do this whole trek, but the food is incredible. That the chef was amazing. Yeah. It really was like a top experience if you can do it. And yeah, do the hike, don't do the day trip. Yeah.
No. I see people post now and I can tell the ones that do the day trip because of their outfits. I'm like, you did not hike. I can tell.
Yeah.
You can tell the hikers because they haven't showered for 4 days.
Yeah.
They're looking a little scruffy, but
yeah.
No, quite an experience. Well, I feel like I could talk to you about South America all day, but we're going to go move forward a little bit here. Maybe we can have you on again in the future and we can just talk about that. But, something I'm interested in, because this is something I'm going to work towards eventually as well, is how have you managed to not work, quotation marks, and keep traveling? Because I noticed that was on your profile.
Yeah, that's just saving money in my jobs and not spending anything for like a year or two, then going away. We did a year trip in 2023, and that was after COVID, but my mindset was still 10 years before, way more expensive than I thought it was going to be. Going to cut short maybe a month in. But yeah, I just kind of used to save up, quit and go and do the whole cycle again. But I think I'm over that a little bit now. I think I'm trying to get my freelance stuff with the YouTube and the podcast and the go to, at least if I go again for a period of time, I have an income coming in, not just no income and the savings get decimated, right? So
I like that. And that's what I got to work towards too, because what happened to me is I worked for a couple of years, had the savings, went to South America. And the whole plan was to have 10 grand in the bank when I came to Australia. Well, I was in
Peru. Same as me.
There
no chance.
So I'm in Peru and I literally have $200 in my account. And I'm like, shit. So I had to fly back to Canada and I had a car. I still had a car that my friend was using and I ended up selling it just so I had money to get to Australia.
Oh, wow. Wow. I remember in Australia, I was like living off the credit card that I had. I ran out of actual money, I think, by Brisbane. So I was hanging on for a week or two until that first pay packet come in. Then finally recovered. Australia is the best place in the world to recover from a decimation in your savings, right? You can get some casual work paid quite well. So it's not too much of a thing.
The wage is quite high out here. Yeah, because I mean, I met a couple fellas actually in Hawaii, of all places. We were rooming together and ended up on the same flight back to Sydney, which is crazy. And they've been in Sydney for 2 years. They're bartenders and their manager's now at the bar. And they said, if you want a job, no problem. And I think, I want to say they're making like 32, 34 an hour, something like that, which is more than what I was making firefighting back in Canada, just to give you like perspective, right? Like it's insane. So the wages are way higher here. And like, if I do the firefighting out here, like it's, you know, even more than that. So yeah, it's a good place to settle down for a year or two, make your money, and then keep going. And that was my whole intention, is come here, build up the bank account, and then go to Japan, Southeast Asia, Africa.
Yeah. I did the same for New Zealand as well. So when I did the 2 year trip, went back to UK for a year, went back to Southeast Asia, and then did New Zealand work visa, right, and done the same thing, same cycle. And the pay is not quite as good as Australia, but not too bad. It's doable.
Was it just as easy to get your visa for New Zealand?
Yeah. Okay. Same thing. Yeah.
The only issue I'm having, though, which I'm kind of just realizing talking to you, is this was my last year to get my visa in Australia because I just turned 35. So I feel like I might not be able to get New Zealand now, which actually kind of sucks.
I'm 36. So all this is over.
You're an old man.
Yeah. Hang on a minute. You could you not still apply for it now? And then when you get to the end of your Australian one, and you can kick off your New Zealand one, you can flip between the two and still have like your year there. You flip over to New Zealand, or at least activate it. And then, because New Zealand, you get 2 years, right? But you can only work a year of it. That's what it was when I was there.
I haven't even looked into it because I got to be honest, and this sounds bad, I keep forgetting about New Zealand and I keep getting reminded that it's right there and I need to go. So
it's so good. Now, I think you get 2 years. Yeah, you get 2 years, but you can only work 12 months or 23 months. So what you could do, you could just get it, activate it, and there's no pressure to work because you can't work the full 2 years anyway. So that could be an option.
Okay, that's a great piece of information. I'm going to write that down right now because, that's a good call. I keep forgetting. So apply for Visa New Zealand because, that would be great. All right, let's move forward here. So I know this was on your pod match profile here. So that's questions. Two favorite countries, and I'm going to do one hidden gem.
Okay, so two and a hidden gem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the hidden gem is El Salvador, for sure.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one.
It's now on the cards as a travel. I'm actually going to maybe lead a tour late next year. I'm just in talks now. We're trying to take a tour group over there. But I went there for 2 weeks solo backpacking, and on the transport, on the local transport buses and local hostels and stuff, unbelievable time. Great value, volcanoes everywhere. Everything is normal in terms of what I consider pricing. Like, your coffees are reasonable. Your accommodation is not like crazy, crazy in other places. And the experiences are never booked up. So you can do anything. You can do free walking tours. You can camp overnight on a volcano. You can go and do some Civil War tour stuff, which I did, which is incredible. And free walking tours are great as well, a great way to settle into the country. And it's quite small, so you can see a lot in 2 weeks, for example. So that's the hidden gem. And I've got some YouTube and podcast stuff about that if people want to know more. Two favorite countries outside of that, I'm going to have to go for Nepal. Been there twice.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a favorite. Always would go back. And I'm going to go for Japan.
Ooh, okay. All right. That's where I'm going next. Yep.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. And why Japan? Why Japan? Give me some reasons here. Sell me on it. If you're a tour agent, why am I going to Japan?
If you like craziness, but you don't like the admin that comes with craziness, but it's like organized craziness, then Japan's a perfect place because you cannot understand how this thing works. But all the trains are on time. Everything is a set price. There's no bartering. Everyone's nice, but everything is doable. You can do anything there. Mm-hmm. So it's this combination. Like, Nepal is crazy. India, crazy. But the admin is a nightmare. So you got a bit of patience, a bit of time. But in Japan, the craziness is still there, but the admin is easy. There's nothing to hide here. It's like that combination, which is quite rare. So I just find the Shinkansen bullet train system incredible. Get your ticket, go for 3 weeks around, 500 k's an hour it goes, and just go and see all the country is absolutely incredible. And just get lost, like, don't even worry about Google Maps, just get to a city, get to Tokyo and just walk and go and see the place, because you'll see something crazy probably every corner. So yeah, Japan's a favorite.
Organized chaos. Well, and that's a good point too. Like, so many people rely on their phones now, right? Like, it's almost a hindrance, right? Because we're always using the Google Maps. We're just going straight to our destination, and we're missing the whole point. The whole point is to go explore and see the unknown and get lost. Like, you know, people stress, oh my gosh, I'm lost. No, I'm going, like, help. And it's like, no, that you're supposed to. You're supposed to get lost. You're supposed to not know where you are. That's the whole point. And that's when you get the best experiences.
Yeah. And if you get lost at the end of the day, just get back on your phone and order an Uber. I mean, there's always a backup,
true, right?
Or there's a train in Japan anywhere. So there's a vending machine if you need some food, like if you somehow not got any food, like there's always options in Japan. So you'll love it. And I'll be keen to see how you get on and follow your travels there for sure.
Yeah, well, I'll have some help because I have two groups of friends going actually at the same time. So I have a group of friends going end of October, beginning of November, and then another group going in November. So I'm hoping I can overlap the two groups. But what's your top story from Japan, out of curiosity, just to put you on the spot?
Top story?
Yeah.
Or
favorite memory?
Favorite memory. We did climb Mount Fuji.
Okay. Yep. That would be a good one.
On the last day of the hiking season, I wouldn't recommend that.
Oh, no.
It absolutely pissed it down. We were soaked.
Yeah.
And what happens is, at any other time of the year in that hike, they've got like ramen stops, there's nice accommodation, it's all quite nice. But on the last day of the hiking season, they're getting ready to pack up, so they don't care about you. They chucked our stuff in bin bags, it's dripping over us as we slept in these like huge bunk beds that had like 10, 12 people on one bunk. It was just a bit of a interesting experience. But the top was incredible. It was a pretty cool vibe and a cool view. But up and down was just pissing down the rain. So that was quite an interesting experience, because I wouldn't recommend booking on the last day of the hiking season. But yeah, it's a cool thing to do. Yeah, it's a classic, iconic thing to go and see.
Is it just a one-day hike?
Yeah, one day, one night. You can pick your station that you stay at. So we stayed at the last station. So the next morning is only a 45-minute walk up to the top. Yeah, pretty easy.
Okay, in caveats,
easy in terms of me hiking, which I'm not very good at. So, yeah.
Well, I'm sure you've done a ton, right? With all the volcanoes and being in South America and all that. So, I'm sure you have some experience at least. Yeah. Yep. Nope. Sounds good. All right. So, yeah, that's the two favorites. That's the one hidden gem. Least favorite country and why, and maybe a story to go with it.
I'm going to say place, because I can't label the whole country.
Ah,
place is Bali.
That's fair. Bali, okay.
Yeah, okay. It's the worst place I've been to. Yeah, 100%. Just a shithole. No, I shouldn't say that. It's just, I just didn't like my
Tell
time.
Tell me how you really feel.
That's a bit harsh. We went there with good intentions to go and see the place, but we just end up partying and getting in trouble, because it's quite, it's full of Australians, isn't it? There's some youngsters going there to get pissed up. And Kuta, where we stayed for a week, is a dive. I wouldn't say in Kuta. I think we maybe stayed in the wrong part of the country, but we just didn't have a great time. We got ill, nights out, we got lost. I think our friend got spiked as well. It just wasn't a nice time to be in Kuta for a week. Got harassed all the time on the beach. Just didn't like it. So that's the one place I don't rave about.
I was wondering about Bali, because obviously now being in Australia, right, it's going to be cheap flights getting up to Southeast Asia. So check out some of the spots like the Thailand, the Philippines, Vietnam. But I wondered about Bali because there is so much traffic there now, and there seems to be a bit of a local consensus that they're starting to get a little tired of it. Like, all right, we got to limit how many of these guys we're letting in here, because like you said, there's a ton of Australians. I even saw a post, and now this could be totally made up, but they were actually debating putting on a tax, a daily tax for Australians, just because of the sheer amount that were over there, especially the expats, right? The ones that aren't leaving, the ones that go there to make a home. And I kind of wondered, because I feel like the country itself could be beautiful, but because of the amount of foreigners and tourists already there, it just wouldn't be that good, unique experience. You're better off going to the Philippines, the Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, whatever.
Yeah, or other islands in Indonesia, there's loads. There's like 600, isn't there, as inhabitants. So there's plenty of options. Go next door to Lombok. I'm sure that's much nicer. For Bali, the interesting thing I do remember, out of all the stuff I saw, like, you know, we think our friend got spiked and my friend got lost and all this sort of stuff. I did give my iPad in to this guy in the street because I needed some music. So this is back in the day where you gave your iPad in and they illegally added music to it or TV shows or films, right? You pay some geezer and you think, he says, oh, I'll come back next morning. And like, oh, well, I'll risk it. And yeah. I was like, I'm never getting this iPad back when I gave it in. And next day, like, this place was barricaded up with a garage door. I was like, oh, it's gone. So I started banging on this door, like, trying to shout and get my stuff back. And he opened up and gave it back to me. So that was a result. I didn't expect it. Thought I lost my iPad. But yeah, that's the one thing I do remember at the end of the trip. But yeah, my friend got an ear infection as well. And like, he had to go back early and stuff. So yeah, it's not a great time.
Well, it's interesting when you talk to people because, you know, their experiences are based off personal experience and the people they meet. So it's not always necessarily the country or the place they're in. It's just what happened while they were there. So exactly, if you get sick, if you get injured, if you meet bad people, that's obviously going to factor into your experience, right? Whereas if you go somewhere and you meet some amazing people or maybe the love of your life or you have this amazing, genuine experience, like that's obviously going to alter your perception, right? So, you know, one person could go to Bali and be like, yeah, this is awful. Like, dude, let's get out of here. And someone else might go there and be like, I love it here. Right.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's curious that you said that. Cause I was actually a little skeptical about Bali. I want to go back to Thailand and obviously to see the rest, but Bali wasn't super high on the list.
Cause Bali, just to finish on Bali, is there's got that weird community now with digital nomads in it. So this, when I was there, that was a thing, up and coming thing. But now this is like this huge westernized communities that don't even integrate with locals. They're just there as digital nomad. I'm like, oh, is that actually contributing to anything locally? I don't think it is. So there's that other vibe there now, which I'm not sure about. So yeah, that's the extra thing for Bali.
Well, and I'm sure that'll be a debate moving forward for a lot of countries, right? That are starting to see more of these expats. And it's like, well, how do we make it so that they're living here, but they're also contributing, not just basically setting up their own community, but like not getting involved locally?
Absolutely. Yeah.
100%. Well, we're getting near the end here. I don't want to take too much of your time. Obviously, it's what the heck is it? Friday night for you? Oh yeah,
yes.
Friday night. You gotta be getting ready to go down in Vancouver there. Go see the sunset.
Long weekend. It's Labor Day, isn't it?
Oh yeah, we don't have that in Australia, but
they do not. No. Yeah.
Oh, it's the long weekend too. Holy smokes! All right. Well,
there you go. It's in a rush. Less time.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, my next question was, where is next for you? What do you have on the list? Where do you want to go?
I've got Bhutan booked in for December. So Bhutan, for people who are listening, is north of Myanmar, actually. It's on the Chinese border. It borders India to the east, like Far East. And it's in that middle bit where Tibet is like kind of bordering it to the north. And for that, you need to book a tour. And you can't get away with it. You have to book a tour and pay a daily fee. So I'm trying to negotiate exchange of no daily fee for some content. So I'm in those conversations with over email, but you do still have to book a tour or a guide, either or. So that's in December. And before that would be Brisbane to watch the cricket in Australia and Bangkok for a weekend. And then that's in December. I think before that, in 3 weeks, I'm back to Europe for a couple of weeks. I go to Czech Republic, Oktoberfest, and then back home to UK.
Oktoberfest. Wow, you're doing all right. You got some fun trips lined up. Yeah,
yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah.
Have you ever done Oktoberfest?
Yep, 10 years ago. Yeah.
10 years. Oh my gosh. Yeah, okay. So every 10 years.
Oh, that
I
was
feel like
that was the last thing on my trip. Yeah, that 2 year trip we talked about at the start. The very, very end of it was Oktoberfest. That was like it. That's my last hurrah.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to cap her. That's a good way to end it. Yeah, definitely. Bhutan. Okay. Very, very. Why did you pick Bhutan out of curiosity? Like, it's very specific.
Because it's been number one on my list for ages. I interviewed someone who's from their travel agency and it's supposed to be the happiest country in the world and all this sort of stuff. Also, it's expensive. And I thought, if I'm going to go fully freelance in the future, I'm not fully there yet. I'm almost there. I won't want to spend that much money. So I'm going now whilst I've got a bit of income. So it's now or never. So I'm going for 10 days. Yeah.
Yeah, no, do it while you can. Absolutely. Well, that'll be a cool trip. Looking forward to hearing about it. And if you're coming to Brisbane, let me know. We can definitely meet up and maybe even do another interview in person. That'd be fun.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I'm there on the 27th of November for about 10 days.
Okay. I should be around. We'll see what I'm doing by then.
Shoot you a message.
See if I have a job or if I'm squatting somewhere, but
in the mines.
Yeah, exactly. No, all is well there. Okay. Well, perfect. I mean, like I said, I feel like I could pick your brain for years here on all your different stories and the South Americas and all that. But like I said, I really do appreciate your time. And at this point, I'm going to leave the floor open for you. If you want to let people know where to find you, where to find the podcast, all that fun stuff, platform's yours.
Cheers, dude. It's been a great chat. I've loved it. So I do the Winging It Travel podcast. It's on all the apps and YouTube actually as well now for interviews, which is a mix of, I do immersive episodes. So like I collect sounds and make it cinematic, and I do conversations like this alongside it, and a few solo episodes from my travels. So that's every Monday, and I do a YouTube channel. It's called Roaming with Hammo. Last name is Hammond Hammo, and that's just mostly every week, sometimes every 2 weeks, depends how much time I have to edit. And that's more raw vlogging type stuff for my travels, not as curated as the podcast. So that's a bit more raw. That's on YouTube. And if anyone's interested, I produce another podcast called Taking a Career Break. That's about people who have jobs but maybe want to take a sabbatical or career break. That's also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It's called Taking a Career Break with Katrina McGee. And yeah, social media is the Winging It Travel Podcast and website as well.
Awesome. And I'll list all that info in the show notes once I do post this episode. But yeah, you're dabbling in a bit of everything there. You got the YouTube, the podcast, all that. I love that. I've got to... I still got to figure out what I'm doing because I have the podcast and I enjoy doing it. It's like people have told me do the YouTube, like do the daily vlogs. I'm like,
yeah,
I don't know though, because that seems like a lot. You know what I mean? Like maybe do one once in a while, but.
It's a lot of work. Yeah, I think daily is intense. And maybe if you get to a point where you monetize maybe. But yeah, if there's one thing I would tell myself back in 2012, 10, 13 is start YouTube, right? Because that's the heyday. So I started it 2 years ago. So I'm a bit late to the game, but. I've just monetized last week, so it's been a 2 year journey. Yeah, so it's just kind of got there. Yeah, so that's a good journey to do. But if people want to message me about how to start it, they can message me or email me as well. I'll be willing to answer any questions. And for the podcast, I'm part of a network, so if you want travel podcasts specifically, you can go to voyescape.com, and my network has about 10 travel podcasts in various different subjects and different types. So that's really worth checking out as well.
Well, how the heck do I get into that? Come on now.
I'll put in a good word.
Yeah, perfect, perfect.
Fellow Canadian, the guy who owns it is Canadian. So,
there you go.
Yeah, he loves it, yeah.
Oh, that'd be wicked. No, that's really cool. Yeah, no, it's exciting to hear. And I see that you're doing well. 180 episodes too is really impressive. That's awesome. You've been doing it that long and that consistently. And then with the YouTube too, getting monetized, that's exciting. So things are looking good for the future.
Just takes time and consistency. That's all it is. Yeah.
For me, it's a consistency. That's where I struggle. I struggle a lot with that. But
because your content will be good enough. I 100% believe that. So that's an easy thing you've ticked off. You do it every week or every 2 weeks, but it's just keeping it up. Yeah, that's the big thing. Just keeping it up. And I think it's trust. Like if your listeners trust that you're going to release one every week or every 2 weeks, they know it, then they're going to tune in, right? So yeah, good luck, man. And I wish you all the best. And of course, you've got a resource in me for any questions, any help, whatever you want. I'm here for you.
Oh, I'll be picking your brain. I'm piggybacking off, you know.
No, whatever you need.
No, sounds good. Well, I really appreciate the chat there, James. It's awesome having you on. You're a great speaker, have great stories, and I can see why you've been successful so far. So yeah, I just want to say thanks again.
Cheers, dude. I've absolutely loved it. Thank you.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed it, make sure to leave a review and follow us on your preferred listening platform. As well, you can follow at upintheclouds_ on Instagram and at upintheclouds on TikTok for my latest travel updates. We'll see you next week for an all new episode. Take care.
Can you travel in a way that's better for people and the planet? On Curious Tourism, the Responsible Travel Podcast, we explore how tourism shapes our world, for better or worse. From over-tourism and sex tourism to last chance travel, join me, Erin Hines, and my producer, Katie Lohr.
That's me.
to explore the ways in which we can all travel better and build a positive tourism future. Subscribe to Curious Tourism wherever you get your podcasts.